Welcome to the Fastcast. I'm Slowpoke number one, John Nicolaitis.
I'm Slowpoke number two, David Chalante.
And we're here to talk about all the things that are far more up to date than what we normally do.
Keeping it quick, finger on the pulse, that's our thing. We're doing it.
Why do you say finger on the pulse like we're checking to see if someone's alive?
Well, that's the thing. You see, if your finger's on, it's like an expression.
Yeah,
it's an expression that people use.
It's a
turn of phrase.
It is a turn of phrase.
It's a common technique used in language
to
communicate ideas in a concise way.
It's just a bit morbid for a fun, fast-paced show. Pew, pew, pew. You know, super cool.
Sometimes, even when we're doing the fast-paced show, I am my regular lethargic self. So, let's not, pressure anybody into feeling a mood they don't feel like feeling.
Okay, fine. We don't have to get up out of our easy recliners. That's okay.
So, John, how have you been this fine fortnight since we last spoke?
How have I been? I've been all right. I must have slipped somewhere in my life because I'm starting to play more Clash Royale on my phone.
Yeah, no, fuck you.
Yeah, I deserve that. That's fair. It's just, I find there's a interesting puzzle element there that I wish I could get on a mobile somewhere else, so I have to look.
I've never played it. I don't even know if it's a good game. I just hate that it exists, and I hate the idea of it, and I don't want to touch it. And I know that makes me very judgmental, but also, fuck you.
It's fair.
That's me. That's me being true to myself. That's me living my bliss.
Man,
saying fuck you to people who play Clan Royale and Candy Crush and shit like that.
So I would say that Clash Royale has... It's an interesting game. It's just buried between the cheapest of microtransactions. Speaking of which, I discovered a fun one today when I accidentally hit on buy a chest for real money.
Oh, yeah, accidentally. No, we all believe you, John.
Yeah, no, my meaty thumbs accidentally pushed one of the buttons while I was...
Yeah, no, of course it was an accident. That's the 50, 60 bucks you've sunk into that game was just completely accidental because your thumbs are too big.
No. Unfortunately, I have gotten into the daily loop, which I have to break. Always turn off notifications for phone games. Going back every day is to build habits, not for fun. That's the only reason. Anyway, and I noticed that...
Hey, quick interruption.
Oh, great. Yep, what's up?
Talking about notifications on our phones, I just got the monthly summary of Switch playtime come through.
Oh, no! for the listeners at home, I have been borrowing David's Switch to play some games.
And I have parental controls on the Switch, which gives me updates for how long people have been playing everything. And so every day I get an update with what John's been playing and how long he's been playing it.
Wait, every day?
Yeah, every day. And I've been writing it down in my creepy notebook.
No!
So that you don't have to keep track of how long it takes you to play through any of the games. But yeah, I just got the monthly summary. You played for 13 days last month. Most played game was Breath of the Wild. An average of 1 hour and 45 minutes of playtime per day.
Funny about
that. That's not that bad.
It's almost like it covers my commute.
Yeah.
Mm.
Versus last month, which was an average of 5 minutes per day. So you're moving in the right direction, at least.
Especially if I was to be playing some game for some reason. Weak. But anyway, when I totally accidentally clicked on a chest, I saw a pop-up when I went to cancel out of it from the Google Play interface that was giving me $1 for every $4 I spent, basically. It was one of those coupon kind of things. It was saying...
Yeah, I don't think it's for every $4. So John very shockedly texted me some screenshots about this as soon as it happened. I think it's probably just a first-time thing. Like, it's still shitty. Don't get me wrong. This is weird and manipulative and shitty, especially from the meta level of the Google Play
interface
store.
being the one,
just from the game.
Yeah, it's something weird about the storefront giving you credit, especially when I backed out of it. It didn't give it to me when I was just going to buy it. It gave it to me when I backed out.
Yeah, and you imagine that there's something sort of agnostic about that. I doubt that it's one of these things where they're like, yeah, Clash of Clans, Candy Crush, and these three other games. These are big games. We know they're roughly on the level. They're reliable performers. We'll do it for them. I imagine that probably pops up no matter what microtransaction you'd turn down. And so that's a little bit, what if it's a super unethical one, and now they're trying to encourage me to do it?
Yeah.
That said, it's not like this is new. Amazon and Audacity both do shit like this, where I got a free trial month of Prime, and at the end of my thing, I canceled out of it, and they're like, are you sure you want to cancel out of it? And I was like, yes, I do. It's like, we'll give you another free month, though, if you want, and they definitely wouldn't have offered me that if I hadn't tried to cancel out of it. And then when I tried to cancel out of that the second time, they were like, oh, 50% off on your first one.
Yeah.
Like, this is a very common tool that you make this offer to people who are being difficult.
Yeah, it's just like the classic thing that when you go to cancel your phone bill or account or something like that, they'll be like, oh, okay, we have to escalate you to the person who keeps you here.
Yeah, it's called retention or something like that. I used to work at a call center that was, it wasn't an in-house call center. It was like a call center agency. And so a bunch of different clients were there, and one of them was a energy provider, and there was, you know, one of the teams was the retention team, and it's like, if you say you don't want it, you get put through to this person, and they have this much shit that they're allowed to give you to try and stay, and that kind of shit. So, like, just pro tip, everyone, just threaten to quit every now and then and see what you can get out of it.
Yeah, definitely.
Like, you don't fucking owe your energy company anything anyway. Yeah, so it's not that uncommon, but it is a little bit odd, like you say, to see it in something where we're not used to seeing
especially,
it.
Especially, in the App Store, right at that point of purchase, it was just very surprising.
Anything else fun happened to you this past week, John?
So, last week, as of this being released, I guested on a podcast called Super Hype Train.
Yes, I affectionately tweeted that you betrayed the very premise of our podcast in doing so.
Yes, I did, because not only did I go on a podcast that was talking about new things all hypefully.
Hot, but upcoming games.
Yeah, the game we talked about hadn't even come out yet.
Yeah.
Which was A Way Out, by the way, made by the same director, Joseph Fares, as Brothers A Tale of Two Sons.
I was kind of which made you like. So I've listened to the episode.
Yeah,
I thought it was quite funny that you apparently were the only one who had played the prior game. Yes. So it was awesome that you were able to give a very unique perspective on A Way Out.
Yeah,
because of that, it's a good episode, by the way. Anybody, you should check it out.
I felt like a real ringer because I was coming in with all that knowledge of the previous game. So it was quite fun being the knowledgeable, talkative one on a podcast.
Yeah, and we just wanted to say thank you to the host of Super Hype Train for extending to us the gracious opportunity to guest on your show.
Mm-hmm.
As I said, guys, if you want to check that out, it's a pretty interesting show, Super Hype Train. Google it, I guess. Yep. That's what I did.
I've shared the link on the Facebook page. You'll find it there.
Yeah, and we'll chuck a link in the description as well.
Yep, that's me.
All right, the other piece of housekeeping we need to get out of the way is discussing our giveaway. We want to say thank you to everybody who participated in it. It is over. So for those of you who are here to find out if you won, you didn't.
Ouch. Yes, David, while being very cold, is also true. We have notified the winner. They were very excited, and we will be organizing their Stez Mini and adapter as soon as we can.
Yes, but to everybody else who was unfortunate in not achieving the prize, we still wanted to say thank you for participating because, you know, you've helped us out, and we just wanted to say thanks for being engaged and thanks for having fun, and I hope you had fun.
Yeah,
and all of the cliched platitudes that people give at the end of these things.
Yes, as a runner-up prize, you get David's platitudes.
You're welcome. Now, we should probably move on to the meat of our episode because we are TikToking our way through this already. John, you made me watch a movie.
I did sort of make you watch a short movie, really.
Yeah,
because
you mentioned this earlier in the week, I think, on Facebook. But yeah, Papers, Please has a short film.
Yeah.
A short film based upon it. I don't think like Lucas Pope was involved.
No.
It's Lucas Pope, right? I'm not making that up.
Yes, it is.
Yeah, cool.
You nailed it.
Thought it might have been getting confused with the Undertale guy, who's called Toby Fox, I think. God, these people have such good names.
Yeah. Yes, there's something with indie developers. They have a certain type of name. Anyway.
But yeah, Papers, Please. I watched that. John, what did you think?
The thing that struck me most about this short, which you can find on Steam, by the way, to just watch the whole
completely
thing for free.
So yeah. It's only like 10 minutes long.
Yeah, it was directed by Nikita Ordnievsky, and I thought that it really captured the atmosphere of the game well.
Yes, yeah. I was going to say the aesthetics of the game were really well captured, and the most fun part of that, I think, is they've done an orchestral version of the 8-bit theme tune that plays throughout most of it. They're speaking Russian, which is not the language they speak in the game. In the game, I think they just speak bleeps and bloops pretty much.
Yeah. It's like a kind of... Basically, an Eastern Bloc kind of mashup nonsensical language.
You know, when you play any JRPG, it's just a... But it's like...
Yeah.
And it's very, very aesthetically pleasing to listen to. But in this, they're speaking Russian, which is a real language.
I was really surprised by how satisfying I found it to watch. And it kind of gives you a story of... like a run through the game. If you played the game, you know that you do runs as far as you can, and this feels like one of those style, and they sort of capture the difficult decisions you have to make in the game?
Yeah, they do it very concisely as well. So in the game, you've got your family that you've got to support, and that costs money to spend on food and heating and medicine and all of that kind of thing. And if you make mistakes or you exercise discretion to kind of bend the rules or break the rules of people,
you show humanity.
Your pay is penalized. And so there's a very interesting mechanic that really pulls your empathy in two different directions. It's a really, really well-made game. But in the film, they can't spend as much time on that, but they do manage to communicate the pressure that the inspector is under very concisely. Like, one of the first shots intelligently shows his wedding ring as he smooths his hair down and stuff like that. So it's very impressive the way it can get a lot of that stuff into a short movie. But John, I did have one major problem with it.
Oh.
Do you think you might be able to guess what it is?
No, David, I can't. What was it?
Are you being serious? Because I thought you would hate this as well.
No, I have no idea what you're talking about.
Okay, so the first or second level of the game in the tutorial, which is, this pretty much covers that. You know, you learn the ropes of what you need to check and what stamps you need to press. And it ends with someone getting through the checkpoint and then setting off a suicide bomb.
Yep.
In the game, the person who you're letting through has all the correct paperwork, and so you're not exercising any kind of discretion or anything like that. It's just, yeah, I'm still learning how the game works. I'm going to put this person through, kaboom, right?
Yep.
And it's a big escalation point in the game, and it motivates why there's so much extra paperwork that you have to do beyond that.
Yeah, because at the start, it's very straightforward. It's basically just checking passports, but then from then on, it escalates into documents and work visas and other things like that.
Whereas in this film, the inspector gets a couple of people who try to, you know, plead with him to show sympathy, and he says no, because he keeps glancing at the photo of his family, and you know that the reason he's being harsh to these people is to protect the people that he loves and that kind of thing.
Yep.
But right at the end, he does make a decision to let someone in, and it turns out that's the suicide bomber. So when he bends the rules and lets this person in, that's when he's punished. And maybe I'm expecting too much from it, but that's not a super great message in this time of, you know, refugee crises and that kind of thing. It didn't sit well with me. I think that the game is just much more nuanced in its themes, because it asks you to make those decisions. Whereas when you as the player don't have that power, when you're just watching a film, the message feels a little bit more explicit. And in this movie, the one time he shows sympathy to reunite this woman with her husband, it turns out she's the terrorist and the, you know, like 15 people die. And so it wasn't great, and I don't think it really captured the themes of the game as well. And part of the reason is, one, it's short, and so it has to be short, but two, it also doesn't have that element of player input, which is so essential to the Papers, Please game, and part of what makes that game the amazing gem that it is.
I think this could be considered an example of what happens when you adapt something, right?
Yeah,
because not only do you need to make it work within the format you're moving it to. So a short film, it needs to be brief, but it still needs to capture the emotion.
And it doesn't have to, but one could argue that a movie does have to have a more sort of structured ending, a climax and that kind of thing that a game doesn't necessarily have to do.
It stands well if you have a strong structure to it, which the short does. But I think when people sometimes make adaptations, when they try and inhabit the world of something, they actually end up losing those themes. I can't recall any now, but this feels like one of those examples where it's like, really the game was trying to talk about the struggles around the authoritarian state and controlling travel.
And it's also like complicity in that and all of that kind of thing. Like, there's a lot that it's handling.
It reminds me of The Punisher and how they kind of chose to sort of go on the PTSD train of thought rather than actions that are taken and stuff like that. Like,
yeah, I know what you mean. I don't know if that's a perfect analogy. Like you said, I'm struggling to think of another thing that has failed in its adaptation like this. Oh, Hunger Games is a good example, actually.
Yeah.
Because Hunger Games as a book didn't need to be action oriented, but the movies were.
Oh,
and
right.
So the book is all about the aromanticism of war and how brutal and unpleasant the Hunger Games are and how like horrific what the people are doing are to the kids. But in a movie, it's got action scenes. There are parts where it sort of conflicts with its own message because of that.
It's almost all action scenes from memory.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So you've got like the spectacle of how cool, when I say cool, how like grand, if nothing else, the action scenes are. And that undermines the message of holy fuck, this is like Gladiators for children? Jesus Christ.
Yeah, I really feel like the horror of Gladiators for children is kind of lost in the Hunger Games, when they make children fighting to the death look like so much fun.
And in the later films, they're talking about propaganda and that kind of thing. And again, we're supposed to think that Katniss is so cool and inspiring, but the point is that the regime is manipulating her image for that very reason. In the movie, it kind of doesn't click quite as well as it does in a book, which doesn't need to be as concerned with visceral spectacle.
Yeah.
And I think that in the same way, the short film has to end on a big note, and it's got to have these story beats. It's only got so much time to explore stuff, and it falls apart in some ways.
If you were going to ask me, though, if it captures the theme like of having the person in the booth struggling with their decisions, I think it shows that well.
Yeah, but it turns out that if he had just towed the line, then a bomb wouldn't have gone off. And that's more what I'm getting at. Like, there is, especially in America at the moment, but also in Australia, a lot of fear-mongering about refugees coming into the country and terrorists using that avenue as a way to incite terror attempts. But the vetting process for refugees is so, so, so incredibly punishing already that it's the worst way for a terrorist to try and incite a terror attack. And there are much, much easier ways for organizations like ISIS to get people into the country. And one of the basic ones is radicalizing people who are already here.
Well, yeah, self-radicalization is typically what we've seen, been seen occurring in a lot of recent terror attacks in Western countries from, only but going off my memory and reading some articles and stuff.
Yeah. But, and this is very important as well. We're specifically talking about terror attacks using the guise of Islam. Obviously, most terror attacks in Western countries are committed by white people who are already there, generally white men. And in Australia, the last couple of times something like that has happened, a mass violence event, it's been someone plowing a car through a bunch of people. We don't think of that as terrorism. And so, like I said, I understand that this is a short film and it's capturing this game and the atmosphere of the game and the aesthetics of the game really, really well. And it's a super, super, super impressive item on a showreel. But part of what disappoints me about that is, you know, the discussion around immigration in our current world of Islamophobia and all that kind of thing. And also the fact that the game handles that very topic better than the film based on it does. It's still a good film. I'm glad I watched it, but that one part of it did unfortunately leave me going, ah, you just missed the mark. So the next topic we wanted to talk about was another video for extra credits. For those of you who listened to our last Fastcast, you'd be aware that there was a pretty lengthy loot box discussion.
Pretty lengthy, wasn't it? Literally the whole episode.
Yeah. Well, we talked through loot boxes and different opinions that mainly expressed by Jim Sterling and extra credits from sort of opposite perspectives. I just wanted to quickly mention that they've got another video sort of on the following on that
who,
same
extra
topic.
Credits?
Extra credits, yeah. Extra credits have another video following on from that same topic. It's called The Legality of Loot Boxes, and they actually talk about the potential pitfalls of legislating against loot boxes. And it's actually a very compelling episode. And part of the reason I bring this up is because we were somewhat critical of Extra Credits' position.
Somewhat.
And this really helps contextualize one of their biggest concerns, which was legislating has consequences that we need to consider quite deeply before we pursue that route.
Really? The Americans, they're going to bring up the comment about legislation being a concern? Wow. Shocked. I haven't watched this video, and looking at it on the extra credits feed made me exhausted.
I understand that, definitely. I was a little trepidatious when I saw the title.
Yeah, I might just be exhausted in general, but I haven't watched it, and I was just putting it off, basically.
I'd recommend it for people who are interested in the topic, because first up, they actually speak very respectfully towards not just Chris Lee, but in particular Chris Lee, who is the politician in Hawaii who is... He's the one who said that Battlefront 2 was a Star Wars themed casino, that guy.
A touch of hyperbole there.
of hyperbole.
Hyper.
The hyperbole is my favorite end of year football event, by the way.
Better than Laser Dungeon.
So anyway, the point of this episode is that they talk about some of the difficulties in basically wording laws that would allow loot boxes to be legislated, right? We all have an idea of what a loot box is as gamers.
Yep.
But actually codifying that into law is quite difficult. So if you treat anything that costs money with a random drop rate on it as a loot box. Do you think that's sort of a fair way to phrase that? A loot box is something that you spend money on that has a random chance of a reward.
Yep.
So that's literally every enemy in an RPG.
Yep. I'm fine with that. I can't stand random drops in RPGs. But sarcasm aside, there's no reason why they couldn't word it to... I mean, this is the problem, right? What do you say? So you say, oh, our loot box, which we're banning, is an in-game purchase that is random. Oh, okay. Well, then they can just move it to currency.
Yeah, and that's the thing, right? So if we want to make wording specific enough so that it only targets loot boxes and doesn't target everything else, then there are ways that you can easily work around that, like Blizzard did with the currency for Overwatch in China.
Yep.
You buy the currency and get free loot boxes with the currency. So if we want to try and prevent people exploiting loopholes like that, then the language has to be broader. Now, in these cases, this is what common law is for. This is for judges to interpret laws.
Yep.
And that helps set precedent for future arguments. But we need to remember that every single person in the chain of creating legislation, most of them are not gamers. And so you have lobby groups who propose laws and then politicians who amend and vote on them, which are then approved by a house of review generally and then implemented by judges who generally are old white dudes.
Oh, I love how you said lobby groups are like they're supposed to be part of that system.
Well, the truth is, in the strictest sense, in a perfect world, they are. People are supposed to be able to petition their legislators to consider and implement laws.
Mm, yes.
And there are pathways to do that in Australia as well. Like, well, there are official bodies and like government arms of the government who propose and draft laws based on community feedback. And then, you know, you have special interest groups who come together and express their concerns. And sometimes those people are groups like that fight for asylum seeker rights and that kind of thing. Other times they're industry lobby groups like the cigarette industry and that kind of shit. And so all of this is quite muddy when you actually walk from one end to the other and follow that process through. But the basic point is that legislating here is quite hard. One of the examples the Extra Credits team used was if you have an expansion pack for a game and there's certain loot that's going to come with that expansion pack at the end of like a particular raid or a particular dungeon, if you have to pay money for that, would you consider that a loot box? If you paid $35 once and got to play the expansion as many times as you wanted, is that a loot box? Or if you paid a dollar every time you wanted to run the raid, is that a loot box? Just a lot of these little examples that show how difficult this is to actually pin down in specific wording.
Sure, that's true. But the problem isn't that this is tough to legislate because things are tough to legislate because making laws is really hard and we don't do it perfectly and people are human. But I feel like the problem is still with the industry people who make these things, right?
Absolutely.
I know Extra Credits are big believers in cleaning house, so that legislation doesn't have to happen and that letting the industry self-regulate. But if they don't start doing something, and I have seen some articles about the next Battlefield game is like really worried about causing another loot box fiasco and things like that. Developers in the industry are getting worried about it. If they can manage to sort their things out, then they should be fine. But I have a lot of problems with how a lot of games are constructed as is, because I find randomness for rewards to be personally very frustrating. So, like, I understand what you mean. Like, where does this demarcation line come into things? And that's tough to find out. But if you would ask me, like, if I trust lawmakers to do the right job, I probably don't trust the American lawmakers very much. And all of the Australian lawmakers I trust have left. So it's tough.
Yeah. And I think that this is the point that not only you and I, but also Jim Sterling and Extra Credits have in common is that the industry needs to fix itself before somebody else comes in to fix it for them, because that is worse than them wising up and getting their ducks in a row. You know
yeah,
what I mean?
Yeah. To me, it feels like this will be a problem for the industry to solve rather than for people who buy games.
Yeah. And I will admit that for the first like half of this extra credits video, they're talking about potential consequences of different things. And I'm like, yeah, that sounds great.
Yeah.
You know, and one of them was like, what? So we're going to say that everybody who's under the age of 21 needs to have their parents buy games for them if they've got microtransactions. They're like, yeah, they do. That sounds great. Like, and they're talking about like, oh, you know, the First Amendment says this and, you know, we're going to deny people access to art. Isn't this just like back in the 90s when it was illegal for minors to buy music that had swear words in them? And I'm like, no, it's not. This is gambling.
Yeah,
like,
yeah. Yeah,
it's not definitely different from that.
It's not like rock music had this week's Lotto's numbers in it.
Yeah, and I know the point that they're trying to make, but I don't know if this is one of those issues that in 20 years I'll look back on and go, oh no, I was very misguided. I can't believe I restricted young people's access to art.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think that I lack that perspective now.
I also, laws are representative of the whole society, right? Mm. That's the point. And if for some reason our entire society was like, loot boxes are gambling and we don't like them and we don't want them in our games, well, guess what? We'll make a law and they're not in our games anymore. The same way we made laws about murder.
And plain packaging for cigarettes and shit like that.
You know, our representatives did this on our behalf and we voted them in. So that's how that system of democracy is supposed to work.
And at least we here have a much more representative system of democracy than they do in America. I think that's important to remember, is that the fundamental system that people use to elect their representatives in America is fucking broken.
Yeah, yeah.
Here, not so much.
Same with the UK. If you look at how votes for people and then how that becomes control of power, that can, you just do that line, you do those, that do that maths, and yeah, it's really bad in some places.
Yeah, we're very lucky here. We have legit, we have one of the best democratic systems in the world.
Yeah.
I'm not just saying that. I'm not a nationalist, but we actually straight up do have one of the better ones.
But what about all those flags at the front of your house, David?
Oh, those are to get burnt.
Yeah.
That's why I have those.
Oh, yeah, cool. And that Southern Cross tattoo?
Oh, that's ironic.
Oh, right.
I did that on a dare.
I could tell it was irony because all the stars had mustaches. Look, I haven't watched the video. I'll probably give it a watch. I understand what they mean. If they're saying, oh, it's hard. But yeah, laws are hard. That's the point.
Yeah. The reason I brought it up is simply because it provides more context and it, like I said, it does help understand a point of view we both expressed a bit of surprise at them discussing in previous videos. So I think that it's worth a watch for anybody who's interested in that.
Yeah, it's an important reminder that people from different places have different opinions on how we form societies and how we should regulate things.
So on self-regulation and the implementation of tools and all of that fun new jazz, I wanted to talk briefly about Twitch and their new community guidelines. Have you heard about this?
I did see some articles, but I haven't had the fun of reading through all the terms of service.
Yeah, so I haven't either. I'm just sort of getting a lot of this information secondhand. And I say secondhand from journalists, but not from like the actual Twitch announcement itself.
Hmm.
But basically, Twitch is taking steps to make its content creators more responsible for the actions of their communities. So a word that's used quite a lot in a lot of this language is good faith. But from what I understand, basically, if a content creator is not performing a good faith effort to make sure their community isn't like harassing other people, they can potentially be penalized for that. And one of the more interesting elements of it is that Twitch, while not actively monitoring other websites, if complaints are filed with information from other websites and the actions of the content creator on like Reddit or their own personal website or that kind of thing, that can be taken into account when it comes to assessing whether or not they violated the community guidelines, which is one of these things that you kind of think like who this person is generally should matter.
Yeah.
But it's so obvious when you think back on it that community guidelines in the past probably only ever dictated how a person could act on that specific platform.
Well, community moderation in general is really difficult. I'm a part of some sort of Facebook groups around topics that try and promote discussion. And it's tough to take a stance because you don't want to isolate people who might have genuine questions. However, there are people who are just trash people, who are just jerks and just do jerk things.
And just jump into like sea lion and all of that kind of shit.
Right. And finding a way to like walk that line or decide what your group is supposed to do is for each sort of place to sort out. You know, Facebook, for example, takes probably too strong this kind of impartial view on things.
Twitter has just announced something algorithmic as well about civil discussion and that kind of thing, which is just another whole fucking bag of dicks. But yeah.
And like, if apparently this is where we're going to spend our time communicating, some framework of public decency needs to be worked out.
What I like about this is that it, at least to what I'm reading, has a level of nuance, but like the positive kind of nuance where, like, when people act in bad faith, we can tell. People can tell when harassers are acting in bad faith, when they're asking bad faith questions, when they're just trying to dogpile someone. And one of the tools that harassers use is this thin veneer of, oh, but I'm just asking questions. I'm just doing X. I'm just doing Y. Everything I'm doing is completely innocent by the letter of the law here.
Or by machine algorithm.
Yeah, and that's what I'm getting at. That, like, any system that can be gamed, it's weaponized by people who do that, because they are the kinds of people who are just trying to quote-unquote win, who are just trying to cause harm to people they don't like, and they'll use any tool they can to do so. So anything like that can be abused. What I like about this is it just feels like it's more genuine and it has a better way of assessing people, because there's a very, like, the one that I'm sort of keeps coming to the back of the front of my mind is that common thing of, I haven't harassed anyone, but I can't be responsible for my community. And it's like, yes, you definitely, definitely can and should be responsible for your community.
I mean, community leaders being, like, that's how we form governments.
Yeah, and I don't want to make it sound like I think, you know, people who play video games for fun on Twitch should be considered the same as politicians, but if you do have a following, you do have an audience, you do have a community, you should be responsible in how you deal with that. And that's why we keep coming back to this phrase, good faith, right? We can tell when a creator has made a real effort to make sure their community doesn't harass. And even if they fail, you can tell the difference between somebody trying and somebody paying lip service. And I think that that's, it's going to be interesting to see how that actually comes through when it's implemented. But I am optimistic about how that will be implemented for Twitch.
Hey, any chance to have human beings analyze words on these platforms is a good thing, because I just don't know how successful the systems that currently deployed are.
And the truth is never, right? Any algorithmic system is never great. And if we want to get really big with it, governments and propaganda networks know how to game this shit. If you have an algorithm that is defined, it can be exploited by people with defense budgets behind them and shit like that, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, we need human beings to be somewhere in that chain.
Maybe that's the employment of the future, you know? Moderation and self-moderation. When, like, robots finally do all of our work and we enter that post-scarcity society, maybe, you know, we'll just all be moderating each other.
That sounds hugely dystopian, but it's so, like, you know what I mean? Like, that sounds like an episode of Black Mirror, where the only job anybody has is monitoring other people to make sure they're behaving properly. But I think that in the sense that you meant it, that actually is hugely important. Like, that is a job that only human beings will be able to perform. We will never be able to build a machine that can fully and always understand human communication at that point in time.
Yeah, well, the problem is it just becomes a wealth thing. And getting algorithms to do things is cheap. Like, I understand, especially YouTube, their issue of all of the hours of video. Like, if you actually had a human being's watch every minute, it's just comical, like, the fast that it would be. And especially in business.
I think it would be literally impossible to do. Yeah. Right?
Also, the business, I don't think they're super duper profitable as is anyway. And also the idea of, like, just factories of people watching YouTube videos is too dystopian for my mind. Anyway, like you said, you know, putting in some better guidelines and holding people responsible for their actions outside of a platform can be a good thing.
Yeah, I think that this is a refreshing breath of actual assessment rather than just let's cover our asses by pretending we've got something in place. So I'm optimistic. We'll see how it goes. Now, John, we should probably talk about some actual video games, right?
Probably. I mean, you know.
Yeah.
Now, the first game that I kind of want to talk about is Into the Breach, which is a new game from the makers of FTL. And it looks very exciting because I think it's set up in that similar roguelike style. It's all about doing like runs of games. But in this one, rather than having a spaceship that you control with a crew, you sort of control a squad of robots and tanks.
Yeah, I don't actually know anything at all about Into the Breach. I'm a huge fan of FTL. It's one of my go-to like unwind games, and I absolutely adore it. But beyond what you've said, that it's made by the same people and there's something about commanding squads, I know nothing about this at all.
I don't as well. And I'm looking forward to playing it because FTL was that, I think you mentioned it, unwind kind of game where I could just sit there and play it and go through it. And they've moved into a sort of a different style of game that is one I also enjoy, which is the grid-based tactical combat. And basically, it's all about controlling area on the map using your mechs and finding ways to position the enemy to get maximum damage. And
isn't there something else? It's called Wargroove or something like that that everybody's going ape for, made by the people who made Advance Wars.
Oh, I think that that was a remake of that.
No, I think it's like a spiritual successor. I think it's called Wargroove, but like this genre of turn-based grid-based strategy,
yeah,
is a super compelling one, and very interested to see this. Part of the reason I don't know anything about it is because I've sat down to Google some gameplay videos like 3 or 4 times this week. And so I go into YouTube and I type in Into the Breach gameplay, and everything that comes up is just a bunch of people with YouTuber names and YouTuber titles. And I'm like, no, I can't. I'm just going to watch more John Oliver. Just leave me alone. I really want to know more about this game. But it sounds so gross for me to say this. I would rather watch a marketing demo than some fuckwit YouTuber.
Yeah, I think we've reached max style for YouTube videos. I follow Matt Lees on Twitter, and he's making his second episode of his new Cool Ghost series, and it's taking him months to do that because he's put a lot of work in. But that's just not the pace that content gets created these days. But I don't care. There's something about when you have to make things fast paced, there's this style of content that's now plastered it, and I can totally understand why you do that. However, you should
normally I try, I this might surprise people, I try my best not to sound elitist on this show, but
oh, seriously, we both try really hard.
Yeah, this is the thing you all need to understand, the level of elitism you see from me, that's me trying my best to not be elitist. Just imagine how much it would be if there was no filtering.
Not only elitist,
I am too tired to maintain that veneer right now. Most of YouTube is fucking garbage, right? Most of YouTube is just lowest common denominator bullshit. They get clickbaity fucking titles. They're just childish and squealy and just the worst fucking thing in the world to watch. And 99% of the people who create these videos and express opinions are idiots that I don't agree with. And so I really want to know more about this game. I need someone I respect to cover it so that I can watch it and not just be furious the whole time.
Oh, yeah. No, I can understand. Because it just sort of came out of nowhere. And I really do think that most marketing these days is done by the YouTubers you just previously mentioned.
Yeah, and this is the thing, right? Like, I was listening to the Besties, and they were talking about how we're seeing more and more games get announced 3 months before they're released, like big budget games suddenly getting announced and then suddenly being out. And part of the reason is because traditional games journalists aren't necessary for that process anymore.
Oh, yeah.
I think you guys might have actually mentioned this on the Super Hype Train episode that, you know, A Way Out was announced and now we've heard very little about it and suddenly it's going to come out and we don't really know that much about what's going to be in it. And I think that that's partly because getting coverage from even YouTubers, but also from press, is in a lot of ways counterproductive for developers now.
They used to say they would give games journalists games months before release because they used to print magazines. And then the internet happened, and so you didn't have to give magazine writers the games months in advance. You could give it to the internet people weeks in advance. And so things started moving there. And then they realized that they could just give fans of things games to review, and that was it. If you wanted to market something, you just give it to a fan, and they'll fan all over it.
Give it to somebody who already loves you. Yeah. And so I think that this is part of that issue. You know, this specific game is probably not a great example of what we're talking about here, but the state of games review media is significantly less satisfying. It's significantly less meaty than I think it used to be. And more and more we're seeing people fall away from that. And I think that's disappointing.
It's like the journalism thing. It's hard work and it costs money. And people don't like paying money for things.
And the truth is, people don't even want journalism, right? Fans of video games don't generally want really, really in-depth analyses of their stuff. They want to be told whether they should buy it or not, or they want people to agree with them about how good it is or how bad it is. That's what the general audience, I think, wants. They see a movie like Pixels, they want to watch people shit all over Pixels.
Yep.
Not even in an intelligent way. They just want to see them generate a whole bunch of really gross, savage metaphors for how terrible it is. Oh, it's like a skunk shat in a shot glass and then made me drink it. Yeah, that's nothing, but that's what people want to see when they hate something. And when they really like something, they want people to tell them that it's good. Again, this is me trying my best not to sound elitist, but you kind of get what I'm getting at there. That part of the reason that more traditional or more thorough journalism is disappearing is not just because it's expensive to produce, it's because a lot of audience members don't want it. They don't want to be disagreed with. Like I said, this is a very, very tangential conversation for Into the Breach, because I don't necessarily think that Into the Breach is a very important piece in that.
Oh yeah, in that overall story.
It looks like the premise sounds cool. I can't even say it looks cool because I haven't even watched a fucking video of it. But I'm interested in it because, like I said, I fucking love FTL. I spent like 160 hours in that game.
Yeah. To me, it hits all those things I love in an indie game. An indie strategy game especially has a wonderful kind of 8-bit art style. It looks like it could run on literally anything. You know,
yeah, I appreciate that.
Yeah, the idea of being able to play games, oh, just make games for laptops so good so I can play in the park. I want to be outside.
Yeah.
And then also, I think they've built in some sort of mechanics, like there's a bit of time travel and stuff that is like an in-universe way of having you be able to go back a few steps if you've made a mistake.
I appreciate that too. I appreciate games that are forgiving. I've said this 100,000 times. Difficulty for the sake of difficulty can go fuck off. Like, I don't care about that at all. If that's your bag, awesome. Thumbs up for you. But I really appreciate a game that lets you make mistakes and doesn't make you feel like garbage because of it.
And I think one of the problems with FTL was that a lot of the mistakes you made, you didn't understand what you were doing. You didn't know the chances of your options. You didn't know what was a safe bet and what was difficulty. It was hard to learn.
Yeah, and it is a surprisingly difficult game whenever I go back to it. I always forget how difficult even the normal difficulty is.
Yeah.
And you are just at the whims of luck. And I think that we expect a lot more from our roguelikes now in terms of that luck skill balance. Like when you look at something like Dead Cells or Downwell or something like that, the level of luck is still very important in those games. But because those are specifically more arcade skill-based games, I think that probably affects what we expect from strategy roguelikes and stuff as well. So I wouldn't be surprised if we see luck still being an important factor, because it always will be in a roguelike, but it taking more and more of a backseat in games like this in the future. And the fact that this has that time rewind element, I think, is a way of eliminating or smoothing out the effects of RNG.
Yeah. If I get a chance to try it out, I'll report back and let everyone know how it is.
All right. Awesome. Now, we'll probably finish on this one here because this is a bit fun. But John had to tell me about this.
Yeah. This is
I
funny.
Had no idea.
I've only read articles about it. I missed the whole phenomenon. But that's totally fine because it's just classic oopsie daisy. Basically, the devs have Yakuza 6 is coming out. It got delayed. I think there were some manufacturing issues with the discs and stuff like that. So
that's such a bizarre thing to delay a game in 2018, isn't it?
But, you know, unfortunately, there's still a part of it, and they didn't want that disparity between digital sales and disc sales and blah, blah, blah.
From a marketing perspective, it's a bad idea to release it digitally like a week before you release it physically, but that's still very funny to me that it was delayed because they ran out of plastic or whatever.
Yeah, but to sort of help mitigate that, they decided to release the prologue as a demo you could download. And from what I read, to ensure that your save game would be compatible with your full copy of the game, so that, you know, you could play the prologue and then just go straight into the regular game, they actually just got people to download the full game and then use software to just restrict what you could access.
See, this part of it makes sense to me.
Yep.
Because if this was a last-minute decision,
yep,
they're just going to say, okay, quickly write up a hack, get it in so that they can only play the first level, but we can't spend the time and energy required to recompile the entire. So let's just restrict them to the first level, but get it out.
Yeah, we've already got the game. It's made. We're just having manufacturing issues. Let's just put it out. The problem was they apparently accidentally released the full game that you could just play. You just play as much of it as you wanted. The software lock, I don't know if it was like a version issuing thing, like maybe not every area got the right code or update. I don't know how the back end of Sony's.
So this wasn't a workaround or anything. This was just download it. Oh, hey, I've got the full game now.
Yep. Some people.
One presumes without needing to pay for it, right?
Yeah, yeah. Some people would just get to that part where that demo is now over screen would come up or go back to the start and they could just keep going and keep unlocking achievements. And they were like, oh boy.
Who publishes Yakuza 6?
So this game was developed and published by Sega, who apparently put out a couple of tweets that was like, this is our mistake. No one's going to get in trouble. All right. We're talking to Sony. Everyone calm down. It's going to be fine. Yakuza will come out soon. All right. Thank you. I just thought it was really funny and very old school. There was,
there's something about this that's very uplifting because, I mean, like, we don't know. Maybe someone got fired for this, which would suck, but it's a mistake that's kind of harmless in the grand scheme of things. Like, I doubt they're going to lose any sales over it or anything like that. It is just very cute. Like you said, it's just a very much a whoopsie daisy kind of. Wah, kind of moment.
It looks like it was just the US version, and they just accidentally put the full game up. So
I think it helps that it's Yakuza as well, because that's such a off-the-wall kind of series.
Yeah,
imagine if this had happened in, like, GTA 5.
Oh, yeah.
Something like that big, or like Far Cry 5 or something. Something of that scale where, you know, even a 1% difference is probably millions of dollars. But yeah, God, that's very funny.
Yeah, it just reminds me of the good old days where, you know, if you had the right password on a demo disc in PS1 era, you could just play all of Spyro, which is a thing that actually happened as well. But yeah, I just thought it was funny. So there you go.
Well, yeah, that's a fun, uplifting note to end it on. Thanks everybody for joining us for the Fastcast. If you want to get in touch with us, we're at SlowpokesCast on Twitter and facebook.com/SlowpokesPodcast on Facebook. If you're looking for anything else we do, head to our website, slowpokespodcast.com. That's got all the links. If you want to see any of the stuff that we've mentioned in this episode, relevant links will be in the show notes as well.
Now our next game is going to be a bit different. We're going to do a two-parter.
It's two games, one episode, double your bang for your buck.
That's a good point. A two-parter is two separate things. No, it is.
Yeah,
it
so is it's a two-for-one special.
Yes, yes. Just like our previous two-for-one special, we're going in
it's
for
a
another
buy
one.
Buy one, get one free. Or should I say, get one free and also get another free, because this podcast is free. You're welcome.
Yes, and we are mashing the two. I think these games just, they fit perfectly together. We have Duskers and Shower with Your Dad Simulator 2015. Do you still shower with your dad?
Yes. For those of you who don't know what these games are, Duskers is a very interesting kind of roguelike. We were just talking about roguelikes. Huzzah.
Yeah.
It's a roguelike where you give commands to drones through like a command line based interface. It's very fun, very interesting. I've played it. John hasn't.
Yes. And Shower with Your Dad Simulator 2015. Do you still shower with your dad? Is basically a meme that is a game.
I am pretty excited for that one, honestly. Like, a lot of people that I quite like have said that it's got a lot to it. So we'll see how they shake out in our episode next week. Thanks so much for joining us, everyone. I've been David.
I've been John.
Thank you for joining us for Fastcast.